O-Ren Ishii and Vernita Green are both dead, murdered in a fit of revenge by the woman whose life they helped destroy. As the bride prepares to take on the sadistic L Driver and the bushwhacking asshole Bud, her arch nemesis is fortifying his defenses and preparing for the ultimate showdown. Meet the human behind the killer in the 2004 continuation, Kill Bill, Volume 2. I'm Connor Zagari,
I'm Colton Jenkins.
and this is Filmgasm. Welcome to the new Filmgasm podcast. Our special today is a sequel of sorts to our 20-year anniversary spotlight on Kill Bill Volume 1 that we did just a few months ago in November 2023. We felt incomplete because we didn't discuss the second part, so here we are. Kill Bill Volume 2. Feels right.
Yeah, it feels weird doing them both separately. But I felt weird watching the first one without the second one, and I felt weird watching the second one without the first one.
I did watch the second one in November after I watched part one because I physically cannot watch Kill Bill Volume 1 without immediately watching Kill Bill Volume 2. I can't do it. In the perfect world, you know, Tarantino gives us the whole bloody affair. We watch the 5-hour cut of the entire movie, and that's our one episode. But
I saw an interview with him, and someone asked, like, oh, why'd you split the movie in two parts? He was like, because like normal people can't sit through a 4-hour movie. I can. And I was like, but now you own them both, so suck it up and watch them both together. Which is the most Quentin Tarantino answer I've ever heard.
Since when has Tarantino made movies for normal people? When has he ever fucking cared about that?
I don't know.
So we covered this already back in November, but technically speaking, this is a new podcast. So what's your history with Kill Bill?
I just remember specifically Kill Bill 2. I remember my parents watching it. It was actually the scene where she's killing California Mountain Snake. And I was like, ooh, I want to watch this. And my mom was like, no, get the fuck out of here quick. And then my dad, you know, after Pulp Fiction, I was like, fuck, I love this guy. My dad was like, oh, I guess it's time for you to watch Kill Bill. And we watched them both together, and my life changed forever.
Beautiful. Yeah. Similar. I watched Kill Bill Volume 2 first because I wandered into my family watching it around the time. I think the scene was Pai Mei. And I was like, that's neat. That's weird. That guy's got, wow, those are some eyebrows. And I didn't really know what was going on. I had no context, but I remember thinking, this is cool. And it was a while before I watched part one. And, you know, connected the dots, but yeah, I have a distinct memory that and of Bud saying wakey wakey eggs and bakey. My grandpa latched onto that and says that all the fucking time.
I say that too whenever I'm trying to wake up my wife for work, and she's like, 5 more minutes, and I'm like, no, you are late, we have to go. Wakey wakey eggs and bakey, but no eggs and bakey because we don't have time because you slept in.
Whenever I'm making eggs and bakey, it's hard not to just say it to my cat.
Yeah. Do you ever give your cat a piece of bacon?
I give him the occasional little bit of like meat if I'm having meat. I would never give him a whole piece of bacon because I'm not cleaning up those shits.
No.
But I'll give him like a little nibble of chicken or something. He's always like today, earlier today, I gave him some a little bit of brisket and he was very grateful. But, you know, nothing bigger than like my pinky because that's going to wreak havoc on his like kibble only diet.
Makes sense.
Yeah. I don't want to be responsible for the consequences. So Kill Bill, we're paraphrasing here. You know, if you want to hear our full thoughts, check out the November episode we did on part one. My question to you. So in this movie, when Bud buries the bride alive, he has a weird little friend help him dig a grave. And it's never once quite like brought up like who this guy is or how close he is to Bud, but it's got to be pretty damn close because he called him to help him bury a woman alive, and this guy's just chugging beer, not caring about the situation. So, I feel we've gotten pretty close. I consider you a good friend.
Oh no.
Would you ever help me bury someone alive? Have we gotten to that level of friendship yet?
Bury someone alive?
Yeah. Like, if I was like, hey, Colton, I've got a situation. Can't talk about it over the phone. Meet me in 20.
Would I ever help you bury someone alive? I ask you a lot of questions if they deserve it.
I love that your immediate is like, I have some conditions.
How sure are we that we're gonna get away with this? No. Buried someone alive, I'd have some questions. Burying someone, absolutely.
Damn. Well, all right. I might need you next week. Smell's starting to get to me in this apartment.
I mean, I always got the feeling that like he was his barrier for his assassin activities, you know?
I always thought it like he's out of that life. Like he's wanted out of that life. He hasn't like spoken to Bill in years. Like I don't think he's got contacts. I just assume this was some Texas weirdo
Some
that he
Texas
like
weirdo.
another guy living in like a trailer down the road where he's into some weird shit and he pays this guy like $2,000 and a bucket of meth to help him bury a woman alive and he doesn't fucking care.
They're definitely necrophiliacs.
Ugh.
Or at least one of them is.
Yeah, the little guy.
Yeah.
But I
I'm
feel like it's just, in this for, revenge on the revenge. But Ernie, I believe his name was, I mean, he's like, just burping and like, just eyeing her and like this.
Yeah, she hot. Let's put her in the ground.
No, she even, he's even like, I've seen better. Like, he's just this like obnoxious, gross motherfucker. I've always wondered who the hell is this guy? And that's the beauty of Tarantino. He can create a character like Ernie, the weird gravedigger, never bring up who the hell he is, but it's like my main takeaway from this movie is what was that relationship?
There's a couple of buds drinking some suds. I don't know.
I
Bud and Ernie. Sud, but that could be their podcast. Bud and Ernie, Sud Bud.
Sud Buds. Just talking about the finer points of the most horrible thing you can do to a human being. There it, that's my question.
But I got a question for you.
Okay.
It's not as fun as that one, at all. But there is a long monologue about Superman and how he pretends to be Clark Kent and how people pretend to be people they're not, but also along with that, there's a big theme of blank slates in this movie and Beatrice starting over. So I guess my question is kind of twofold. Beatrice is obviously a killer pretending to be a mother. My first question is, one, does Beatrice, is she, does she deserve a clean slate and a second start? And secondly, have you ever in your life, you don't have to get into specifics, sort of changed yourself to make someone else like you, pretend to be someone you're not, and kind of say, I'm going to restart my life as the person I want to be?
Oh, that's an interesting question. All right, so to answer the first part, no. She killed like 100-something people to get to this point. I mean, yeah, it's fucked up what they did to her, but she was not innocent. She was an assassin, worked for a worse assassin who got, tried to get out of the business, but, ran away with his kid and he reacted to, there's no hero of Kill Bill. But they're all dead. Of course, I have a feeling the Tokyo Underground's gonna go after her at some point. But and L, she's blind and pissed. But she's gonna try. Fun fact, that kid grew up to be the hippie chick who sells Cliff Booth a acid dip cigarette Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
No fucking way. That's
Yeah,
her kid.
that's BB. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's yikes.
But yeah, that's interesting. But Tarantino's movies largely don't have heroes. They have morally gray people who, take a stand for something. I mean, he's got a few, Aldo Raine, Django, like they're heroes. Cliff Booth, hero. But
Yeah.
most of these guys are, Jules and Vincent or, Reservoir Dogs guys. They're not heroes. They're just assholes who are working for bigger assholes.
Yep.
Interesting. The second question. So I've never fully like changed who I am for somebody because I've yet to meet somebody worthy of that. Like, I'm kind of like John Candy in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Like, what you see is what you get. I'm the real article here. Like, I don't have skeletons. I don't have secrets. I don't hide what I like. Like, this is me. But I have had people in my life that I've, changed bits of myself to try to get them to see me in different ways. It's never worked. It's always reeked of desperation. And I've always hated who I was when I did that.
Yeah.
So I don't think you should change who you are, at least not entirely. Like, yeah, I make compromises, obviously. If if you don't
If
shower,
you were
start showering.
an assassin, I'd say it's a safe bet you should change who you are.
Yeah, but nobody ever gets out of that life. They think they get
No.
that life, but it always comes back to haunt them.
Absolutely.
That's the trope of assassin movies.
Man, that's interesting.
Yeah, I've always believed in, be yourself. The right people will flock to you if you represent yourself in a wholesome, real way. And the right
I think
people
sometime,
will stay too.
yeah. I think sometimes it is kind of hard to be yourself, especially with all of the I don't want to sound like an old person, being like, oh, video games are gonna make kids school shooters, but media, like, have you ever been watching a movie, like, especially when you're young, and then the movie's over and you're like, well, my entire personality is gonna be based on the main character of this movie now.
I did that when I was 3 and never looked back. I've been emulating Marty McFly my entire life.
That's great.
But yeah, no, that happens from time to time. Like, I'll watch a movie and I'll be like, oh shit, now I want to be an FBI agent, or like, oh, I want to be a reporter now.
Exactly.
I want to be from Krypton. But that wears off by the time I watch the next movie.
Sometimes I don't mean to get like, super depressed on the show, but I have times where like, I'll be in like a really bad rut. I'll like be hating myself, and I'm like, man, I gotta do better. I gotta like work on myself. And then a couple of days later, I'm like, I'm fine. Like, I like who I am. I don't have to change for anybody. I mean, if you want to change for yourself, go ahead, but don't deny yourself who you are. That's how you get into worse ruts and you become an unhappy person.
I agree 100%. I've been in quite a rut for quite some time now, but I've not let it compromise like who I am. I will never let that happen. We're talking about like, big things. Like, if you want to lose weight or like dye your hair or, change your fashion, whatever, go for it. Give something a shot. But I'm talking like lying to yourself about internal aspects of your personality to make somebody who doesn't deserve it like you. And that's painful shit.
It really is. Yeah, like this podcast, you haven't it hasn't become like a fucking women are all bad, fucking incel fuck capitalism. This is still a film
Yeah.
podcast.
And you know what? I think a big part of that is two of our team members are married. That helps. That helps a lot. Yeah, I also would never bring somebody into this team who I think is like a toxic person or like pretending to be I almost did that once, and that almost like that could have turned into a serious problem. Thankfully, though, I recognized it and nipped that shit in the bud. But yeah, attention teammates, if you've made it this far, congratulations.
Congratulations.
You're one of the good ones. Yeah, that was a good question. I like that. Insightful. Mine was like, hey, you want to bury a body?
That's, that's insightful too, though, in its own way.
I'm thinking here like I should maybe I should have thought through that a little bit more.
Oh, man,
You
man.
really tried with yours.
There's an FBI van circling your complex right now.
Dude, the shit I've looked up for this show, like the amount of horror movies I've talked about, I'm on a list somewhere. Like, but yeah, definitely. You don't watch the entirety of the X-Files like six times without somebody being like, "There's something wrong with this guy."
If you have a Reddit, you're on a list. I'm sorry.
Okay. So let's get into production info on Kill Bill 2. My main source for today's production info is a brief 26-minute making of featurette on the Kill Bill Volume 2 Blu-ray. There's yet to be a really comprehensive documentary on Quentin Tarantino's career. I'm assuming that'll happen after he releases his 10th movie and goes away. So until then, we're also using IMDb trivia, a Magic 8-Ball, the telephone game, and prophecies from Nostradamus. So, with all that in mind, got a pretty good narrative for you here.
Was about to ask. I was like, "What website's that? What's the?" Oh, getting way off topic here. Speaking of Nostradamus and his prophecies, did you hear what's supposed to happen in 2029?
No, what?
Oh my God, there's a giant asteroid. You need to look this up if you don't know about this. There's a giant asteroid that's coming scarily close to Earth, and it's huge.
Damn, who do we call? Bruce Willis is out of commission.
I don't know, but when they're asked like, "Oh, is it going to hit Earth?" they're like, "Probably not."
Probably not. Loving that exact science, NASA.
It's like gonna kiss Earth's orbit.
Sweet, sweet. Maybe it'll, scrape Texas and I can not worry about this
Right.
anymore.
Yeah.
I'm not that concerned. I say bring it. Let's burn this shit down.
No, yeah, like anytime, I'm watching like 2012, Greenland, Don't Look Up, all these like end of the world movies, and people are so scared. I'm like, why? Why be scared if you can't help it? Zombies, you can be scared. Slashers, you can be scared. The sun exploding, there's no point in being scared because there's nothing you can do about it.
It will
Go die.
100% go down the way it went down and don't look up.
Well, 100%, yes.
Yeah. Ugh, that's crazy. Do you believe in Nostradamus?
No, but some of his shit has some of it's pretty accurate. Like the plague happened, COVID happened the year he said a plague will happen.
See, here's the thing with Nostradamus, every time he hits, he doesn't like 600 times.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're essentially grabbing a handful of darts and just chucking them at a wall. If one or two hits the dartboard, that does not mean you are a good player.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of like you ever get like a fortune cookie at a Chinese restaurant and you read the fortune and you're like, yeah, whatever, and then like a couple days later something similar happens, you're like, holy shit.
One time I opened when I was a, when I was a kid, I opened a fortune cookie and there was no fortune and I thought I was gonna die. Was like, I have no fate.
That's great.
The older I get, the more I super do not believe in fate or prophecy or any of that
Yeah,
nonsense.
no. Fucking Kratos over here. A couple relationships ago, we got tarot reading.
Oh boy.
It's like gifts you give to each other, like tarot cards. And both of our like last cards basically said the relationship is gonna end. We're like, no, it's not. And years later, I'm now married to a different woman. So
Weird that they I noticed like that stuff, tarot readings and fortune telling. It's always good news. It's always good news.
it is always good news. I feel like this is weird. This is stupid. I know I shouldn't. You know those fucking Zoltar machines?
Yeah.
Every time I've used one, I want to collect their tickets because every time I've gotten a Zoltar machine ticket, it comes true. Whatever it says will happen, happens. So there's definitely some like wizard in each cabinet, like a little gnome wizard.
You ever see the movie Big?
No.
Tom Hanks, 1988, a 10-year-old kid goes to a Zoltar machine and he says, "I wish I was big." And the next morning he wakes up as Tom Hanks.
Oh my God.
He's a kid in the body of like a 25-year-old man.
Shit, maybe Zoltar. I've only seen two. I've only seen one in Ripley's, Believe It or Not, and I've seen another one on Coney Island in New York.
I think the one in Coney Island was the one from the movie.
Was it actually?
I think it was. I think they filmed that in New York. Might have been Chicago, but there's a Zoltar machine at an arcade in Austin called Pinballs. I've used it a couple times. I have not. Mine has, maybe you got to believe in it because I don't at all.
Maybe.
I have zero belief in the paranormal when it comes to fortune telling or horoscope or the stars, any of that bullshit.
I believe in the power of a horoscope if you believe in it.
Well, see, the thing is, for people who believe in it, they read it and then they let themselves be led by it. So they're making the decisions that the horoscope is suggesting subconsciously because they already believe it and they're pointing themselves towards those outcomes.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like I believe in it in the sense that if you read a horoscope and you want it to happen, it will happen because you will subconsciously make that happen.
Now, see, I've
You know
been
what I
fucked over too many times by the universe to believe that I'm due for a little scratch. So,
Let me put it this way. I view tarot readings, zodiacs, and all that shit like self-help or motivational speech.
yeah, I have family members who are starting to literally like lead their lives according to the way their horoscope tells them, like, you know, fucking Sagittarius is going to turn out this year. And I think that's terrifying. And I'm trying to get them to realize how fucking stupid it is. But I'm failing.
What about like rocks?
Oh, the fucking healing power of crystals? Oh, dear Lord.
So my wife currently does believe in the power of crystals, and my grandmother believes in the healing power of crystals. I don't want to say they're wrong, mostly because my wife listens to this and my grandmother is dead. So I don't want to, upset anyone.
I could do I'll take the heat.
One thing I do like about all that like witchy shit, inset in not Jesus Christ, not inset.
All right.
Incense.
Explain yourself, please. Goddamn.
Yeah,
Incense is great. Yeah, I love smelly fire too.
it's great. For Christmas, I got one of the ones that like flow like water. It's incredible.
Yeah, this just isn't my world at all. I find it all, to me, it's exactly the same as like the woman who tells your fortune in Haiti by squeezing the goat's testicles. Like it's the same brand of crazy bullshit.
Oh, that's great.
I don't remember how we got, oh yeah, fuck it, Nostradamus, who I also think was full of shit. But anyway. So Kill Bill Volume 2 is the sequel to Kill Bill Volume 1. Didn't think I had to tell you that. You probably figured that out. The 2 is a dead joke. But, you know, covering my bases. The 2 were filmed simultaneously. Part 2 was released 6 months after Part 1. Both were met with critical acclaim, and Tarantino considers the entire thing to be his fourth film in a planned 10-film career. He's got 9 in the bag. His 10th is currently in pre-production. It's called The Movie Critic at the moment.
Isn't it about like a movie critic decides to watch a porn?
We haven't gotten a lot of information about it. From what I understand, it's about a movie critic who writes reviews of regular movies for a porno magazine. So, like, if Hustler was talking about, you know, fucking
God.
Toy Story, that's what he. I didn't know that was a thing. Like, next to the Dear Penthouse letters is, you know, what Joe Smith thought of, you know, the new Marvel movie.
Dad, why are you reading Maxim? Because I have really poignant movie reviews.
I might be the only person on Earth who could talk like family and friends into believing that my giant stack of Playboys is for the film reviews.
But I'm your friend, and I would believe you if you told me that.
Yeah, right? Because, of course, like, if anybody would be doing that, it's me. I've got the internet. I don't need magazines.
Yeah, who the fuck is buying magazines?
I don't know. I always
How
wondered
is the
about that.
business still in magazines and shit? You can cut this if you want. You ever been to a pawn shop?
I have not. I've thought about it many times, but I'm also like, I don't have enough cash and I'm not paying for anything in there with a credit card.
Like, they sell movies. Why? The internet is free.
I don't know about I that's got to be for like the 50-year-old dudes who don't know about internet porn.
The internet's too complicated. I'll just
I mean, hey, if anybody can understand the appeal of physical media and a collection, it's me.
That's fair. That's fair. I don't want it to go away. I always wanted to be there.
If I mean, I have access to all of my favorite non-porno scenes right there. So I get that, If there's a certain scene you love that keeps getting taken off Pornhub, go
Yeah, you don't have to scroll to
DVD.
find anything. You just be like, oh, this one right here.
Yeah, that's wild. Some things are just too nostalgic to die.
Someone out there collects porn.
Yeah,
So,
100%. I think there's a
like
guy
the
in the Guinness Book of Records who has like the biggest porn collection. And I guarantee you he's either divorced or in the process. Because no, the wife doesn't like was probably the first to find out about that and was like, "No, you're not calling Guinness."
Yeah, she opens the weird hatch under the bed that she found. She's like, "What the fuck is this?" And he's like, "Hear me out, hear me out. What if I call Guinness?"
I mean, if we're talking Guinness World Records, it's got to be like he has another house he's been paying for that is just for his porn.
My God. Imagine if, like, she doesn't know. And one day she's like looking through one at like the library or Walmart to get for her son for like Christmas or something, and she like flips to the page with him on it, and she's like, "What the fuck is this?"
That is, oh my God, that's hysterical. I there's like porn historians and shit. Like it's not as taboo as it was.
It's not. There's a documentary that's actually really good. There's actually two. There's one called Life After Porn, and it follows like a couple of porn actresses. And it shows just how awful the porn industry is. And then another one is actually a documentary about Pornhub. And that one is brutal. Pornhub is disgusting.
Well, yeah. Yeah, the shame has to come from somewhere.
Absolutely does.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm enjoying the
That's
tangent.
how we're announcing the new show, Porngasm. No, I'm kidding. We're not.
Porn get Filmgasm's the perfect name for a porn studio. I'm honestly surprised no one's ever like called me to try to buy the name.
Yeah.
Some San Fernando, Dirk Diggler asshole. It's like, hey, I really want that
Oh my
name.
God. Could you imagine a porn podcast?
I'm sure there's porn. Po I think there's like porn stars who have a podcast. Like that's there's no way that's not a thing.
Yeah, something. But a show like ours. Now, did you like the video? Yeah, it
Like
was great. Great tits.
reviewing porno. Just like I saw this one scene like last night, and I got to tell you,
Oh my God.
that would God, we would be the creepiest motherfuckers in the world doing that scene by scene, releasing like 15 episodes a week.
I know we said that we were recording for the day, but due to unforeseen circumstances, we are recording a fourth episode today.
Yeah, as soon as I get back from the store with more Vaseline, we are ready to record.
Oh, man.
Jesus Christ. Thank you for that. That's fantastic. Okay. So, when describing Kill Bill, Tarantino said this in the featurette that I watched. Volume one is the questions, volume two is the answers. I like that. That explained Kill Bill pretty good for me.
Yeah, that is very good. I also see the first one as like a samurai film and the second one as a western.
Oh yeah, that was very intentional as well.
Okay.
Yeah, he used a lot of Morricone scores in this movie, scattered throughout. We'll talk more about that when we get to music. So, let's talk about Pai Mei.
Oh, yeah.
So while I was watching this, I came to the realization, well, the featurette showed the origins of Pai Mei in film come from the Shaw brothers. And I was like, oh, cool. So Pai Mei was not a Tarantino creation. When I looked that up, turns out Pai Mei was real. Holy shit.
That's insane to me.
So his original name is Bak Mei. Pai Mei is his kind of westernized name.
Okay.
And he's a prominent figure in Chinese mythology, possibly history. There's no guarantee he existed, or at least he didn't exist like this indestructible force of nature who destroyed an entire clan of Kung Fu warriors. He was not like that. He's said to be one of the Five Elders, which was a group of survivors of the Shaolin monastery destruction at the hands of the Qing dynasty that occurred in either 1647 or 1732. And this led to kind of a revamp of Kung Fu, which is pretty cool, pretty amazing. There's no real historical record of the event beyond hearsay and mythology. So he might be kind of a Chinese John Henry.
Okay. That's fucking insane that he was real, dude.
Yeah, isn't that nuts?
Did he have crazy eyebrows in the
I mean, he does in all the depictions, so yeah. Pretty wild. The character was introduced into popular culture in Kung Fu movies produced by Shaw Brothers Limited, the largest production company in Hong Kong at the time. It was in the 70s. Between 1925 and 2011, the company produced over 1,000 Kung Fu movies, popularizing the genre worldwide. And apparently they shut down shop in 2011. I didn't know that. Some of the films Pai Mei appeared in were 1977's Executioners from Shaolin, 1979's Abbot of Shaolin, and 1980's Clan of the White Lotus.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. And in that last film, Pai Mei is fought by actor and martial artist Gordon Liu, who later played him in Kill Bill Volume 2. That's fucking awesome.
That's great.
Yeah. And Liu also played Crazy 88 leader Johnny Mo in the first film.
That's the same guy.
Yeah, that's Gordon Liu.
Oh shit, that's cool.
His most famous movie is the 36th Chamber of Shaolin, which is apparently this epic kung fu movie. It was on Netflix for a while. I don't know if it's still there, but I'd really like to watch that. Yeah. I remember the original plan for Pai Mei was going to have Gordon Liu speak Cantonese and then Tarantino
Oh, yeah. I heard this.
dub himself over the Cantonese, like, a bad English dub. I'm so glad they didn't do that. And then Tarantino also considered playing Pai Mei himself for a little bit.
Is this the only movie that he doesn't cameo in? Oh, I guess he, yeah. Oh, he's not in Hollywood.
I
Is
don't
he?
think he's in Hollywood. Yeah, it might be. Or, well, I don't know. Yeah, I think Kill Bill and Hollywood are the two that he was he in Jackie Brown?
I don't think so, but I wouldn't. That doesn't feel like a Tarantino movie.
Ooh, Austin's gonna text you later.
Oh, fuck. I'm sorry. Please don't hurt me. Please. It's just it doesn't. It doesn't. If you watch all of his movies and then watch Jackie Brown, you can tell that it's different.
It's the only one of his work based on a novel by somebody else, so that's where that
Yeah.
comes from. Still a great movie. A couple more production stories. Daryl Hannah improvised the scene where Elle's eye gets removed by Beatrix Kiddo and she goes insane. She did this because she thought it would make Tarantino laugh, and he did, and the scene ended up in the final movie. So when she just flips out and is like, oh my God, that was just her trying something.
What was supposed to happen? Was she just supposed to fall down?
I think so. She's supposed to just be like in shock and like, scream, but not like flip her fucking shit and start destroying the bathroom.
Well, that would be fucking lame if she just fell.
And she hurt herself pretty bad because she was, slapping, she was breaking a lot of shit with her bare hands.
Yeah. So, like, if they were to make another one, I would have her and a little girl team up and like hunt her down. That'd be cool.
Yeah, that's pretty much what Tarantino said would be Kill Bill 3 if he ever did it. But he apparently
Oh.
said last year he's not doing it.
Well, him and Uma Thurman made up, right?
Yeah, he just has other stuff he wants to do. He thinks that his time, he said he's doing 10 movies and that's it. So he's about to do his 10th
Do you
and then he's
believe
going to
that?
bounce. I think he is. He's been pretty adamant about this. And for a director to have a 10 film perfect streak would be fucking unprecedented.
That's, yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, Miyazaki said he was done and his son was fucking up the studio, so he came back one more time. So I don't know.
I think Tarantino, I don't think he's done writing. I think he's done making movies, but he's going to write, he's written a few novels. I think Kill Bill 3 might be like a graphic novel, which would be sweet.
That'd be pretty cool.
Could bring Bill back if, the idea that he survived the exploding heart technique holds true.
Wouldn't it be crazy if Pai Mei taught her how to do it and taught him how to survive it?
Oh,
Because he was so smart, he knew something would happen. I don't
that's fucking cool.
know.
Mate, that's a neat idea. I like that. Shit, Q, if you're listening to this.
No.
Kill Bill 3, graphic novel. We'd all buy it. You'd make millions. After I thought this was really cool. Like, I didn't catch this until a recent viewing. When L tells Beatrix that she killed Pai Mei and Beatrix snatches out her eye, she uses her right hand, which was the arm that Pai Mei said belongs to him.
Oh, that's fucking great.
Pai Mei's revenge, motherfucker. That's awesome.
That's so cool.
That's yeah.
Do you think Pai Mei liked Beatrice?
Eventually, I mean, he
You don't
tried.
think from the beginning?
At first, he was like, "Fuck you, white American bitch." But then she wouldn't give up, and he realized that and was like, "This woman has perseverance. She cares about this,"
Hmm.
and that's why he taught her the 5-point palm exploding heart technique. She was his greatest student.
Yeah. And he taught her how to rip eyes out of people's sockets.
Which is a handy skill that I'm not gonna lie, I would abuse that. Anytime I was even remotely slighted, I'm taking that Wonder if that's possible. Like, can you do that? Like that? It's like a snatch.
Yeah, you can. Oh, you want to know some fucked up shit? So yeah, you can pull your eye out. Secondly, this is awful, and I'm sorry to scare everyone listening and you. I'm sorry. If your immune system ever finds out that we have eyeballs, we would go blind because our immune system would attack our eyeballs.
That's frightening.
Yeah.
And a hell of a design flaw.
I
Well,
know.
I guess I'll just keep it a secret. So there's the common fan theory that Samuel L. Jackson's character Rufus is Jules Winfield from Pulp Fiction, who, is wandering the earth after having an epiphany about death. Who's to say?
Yeah.
Only Tarantino knows for sure, but he has, connected his films before, so that wouldn't be crazy.
How what are the connections again?
The character of Donnie Donowitz in Inglourious Basterds has a grandson in True Romance, so his name's like Lee Donowitz, I think. Vincent Vega in Pulp Fiction is Mr. Blonde's brother in Reservoir Dogs, Vic Vega.
I realized that. I was like, oh, same name. But it's because it's his first movie, he's reusing it. But they're related.
Yeah, he intended to do a prequel movie called like Double V Vega with both of them, but they got too old for it to be a believable prequel.
Oh. I was going to say make a sequel, but I forgot they both fucking die.
But yeah, he did a, shared universe before it was cool, and I respect that.
Yeah.
So Kill Bill 2 has some controversy attached to it. We might have talked about this in the part one
I think
video.
so, yeah.
We might be repeating ourselves a lot, but it is basically one movie. So, fuck it. In 2018, Uma Thurman posted footage online of a car accident that occurred when they were filming this movie. At the time, she had voiced her reservations about filming a scene while driving a car over a straight dirt road, and she'd requested a stunt performer. However, the scene was not considered to be a stunt, and the stunt coordinator wasn't on set, and Quentin Tarantino was like, we got to get the shot. He persuaded her to do the scene herself. And while she was driving the car, there was an unexpected turn in the road. She lost control of the car, crashed it into a tree, ended up with a concussion and damaged knees. She tried to obtain the footage as proof, but Harvey Weinstein, that saint, reportedly refused to release it unless she signed a document that would release the Weinstein Company from liability.
Oh.
Yep. Years later, Tarantino gave her the footage and helped her come forward in the wake of multiple sexual assault charges against Weinstein. Thurman claimed to be one of the victims. Thurman and Tarantino admitted the incident had fucked up their friendship, and they reconciled and they're on good terms now.
That's good. They're
It's
not
fucked up.
together.
No, they dated briefly, but no, he's married with a couple kids now. But it's fucked up that he put her in that position to begin with. Just for the shot.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't think any. This is controversial on a movie podcast. I think, some shots are not worth it, like
No, of course not. Yeah.
footages and everything.
No, if it's ever like if there's a risk of like serious danger, injury, death, no, it is not worth it.
No, not at all.
No movie is worth someone's life.
Well, what's that? Fuck. It's not. Is it Jackie Chan? Jackie Chan, he does his own stunts and he almost died.
Oh yeah, many times.
Dude, what the fuck?
You ever see
Not in.
the big one? You ever see the movie Who Am I?
No.
He slid down a fucking skyscraper.
Oh my God, dude.
No net, no safety precaution. If he misjudged the distance, he would be dead. It took him months to get up the courage to do that stunt. And it looks amazing in the movie, but also the whole time you're thinking, why?
He could have died.
Easily. Yes. Unreal. But yeah, I know I'm but then again, I don't have that mindset. I'm not the guy who is willing to sacrifice everything for art. And there are people out there who are. And some of them are geniuses, but some of them are also psychos.
So not in Hollywood, but in like the, theater world, like the live performance. You ever heard of a Spider-Man Into the Dark, Out of the Dark,
Turn off the dark.
Turn Off the Dark?
Yes.
Yeah, that and the Superman show, apparently like people died or almost died because of the stuff on that. And it's just never worth it. Nothing is ever worth it.
No, it's not. I mean, I immediately go straight to the incident that happened on the set of the Twilight Zone movie in the early 80s. Where do you know about that?
No.
That is the most horrific thing that ever happened on a movie set. Basically, they were filming a scene that was a Vietnam chopper sequence, and they were shooting late at night. They were over the schedule. They were supposed to be done. And director John Landis wanted them to get this shot of a helicopter swooping in while Vic Morrow, this movie's lead actor, was like saving these two Vietnamese kids in this sequence. The kids were not supposed to be on set that night. Like they legally, they were not supposed to be there. The helicopter went ballistic. Something went wrong with the chopper. It landed on Vic Morrow and the kids, decapitated Vic Morrow,
Oh, dude.
and killed the children too.
Holy shit.
All three died. He went on trial for negligence and manslaughter and was found not guilty. But it tarnished his reputation in Hollywood forever. The movie was still released. They edited that part out, but they still made the movie. That's considered like untouchable. No one's ever done a Twilight Zone movie since. And so it's kind of hard to find as well. It's a really good movie too, which is unfortunate, but it's forever got this crazy association with one of the worst accidents in movie history.
I don't want to make light of the situation, but imagine making a horror movie like The Twilight Zone and then two kids die on set.
Yeah. There's a docuseries on Shudder called Cursed Films that talks about like movies that had bad shit attached to them, and there's an episode on the Twilight Zone movie.
Is fucking Wizard of Oz part of that? Because fuck. Oh
I
shit, what's
don't.
that movie where everyone started to die after it came out?
Poltergeist.
Poltergeist. Oh god, that's fucking terrifying.
Well, they used real human remains on set, so that probably is what did it.
Oh my god.
Cheaper to just go get some corpses than to, make a fake corpse.
This might be controversial, but I think everything surrounding the film Poltergeist is much scarier than the film Poltergeist.
Blasphemy. No, I disagree. I love Poltergeist. That movie's
It's
terrifying.
not scary.
Yes, it is.
No.
Agree to disagree.
Connor, a kid slides across the kitchen floor.
Then another kid is strangled by a fucking demon clown toy and eaten by a tree. Craig T. Nelson pulls his face off. The pool is full of corpses. Like, what more do you need?
Okay, granted, maybe it's been a while since I've seen it, but I don't remember it being that scary.
It's pretty damn scary. All right. Well, guess what you just did? You just got Poltergeist put on the calendar.
Oh God, okay.
I gotta learn you a thing or two. Oh boy. Okay. Here's some quotes from David Carradine regarding Tarantino and the role of Bill that I got from the featurette. I thought these were really cool. The essence of a Tarantino movie is not the violence, it's not the action. It's the inside look at the mind and heart of violent people.
Yeah. In that interview I talked about when he said why he split the two. He was talking about the ending of Kill Bill Volume 2. And he said basically he likes to do things kind of differently. Like he created a heist movie, but you never see the heist. And this one he created a revenge plot, but the grand finale is a dialogue scene, which is really cool. He's one of, he's not my favorite. He would be my favorite director if I hadn't seen The Lighthouse and The Witch. And the only reason that I like Robert Eggers more is because he just the, I don't know. I don't want to say the work that he does because Quentin Tarantino does work on his sets, but I mean, Robert Eggers does the work. He researches every, yeah. Anyway.
It's the aesthetic, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, I can't wait for Nosferatu. It's gonna be so good.
I can't fucking wait, dude. I can't believe that Willem Dafoe is in it and he's not playing the vampire.
I mean, wouldn't it be kind of like, I don't know, cheesy if he was though?
Yeah, I guess I would.
He also Carradine also said that Bill is the role of a lifetime. He was
Really?
he said this was the crowning moment of his career, which
Oh,
is
yeah.
pretty awesome.
Yeah. You're playing Nosferatu.
No, Kill Bill, David Carradine,
Bill.
Bill. Not Bill
Okay.
Skarsgård as is going to be Nosferatu, but I'm sure he probably thinks that too.
Oof.
You mentioned the final scene being a dialogue piece. It was supposed to be this giant sword fight between Bill and Beatrix, where she was going to be wearing her wedding dress. For some reason.
I feel like that would have lessened the finale, though, because Quentin Tarantino even says, regardless of what it looks like or not, Kill Bill is a love movie.
Yeah.
I always get the sense, and I could be wrong, but they still have feelings for each other, but she hates him more than she loves him.
Yeah. Absolutely, I mean the whole, finale is basically her kind of having to face those feelings that she still has, even though, the man murdered her fiance and shot her in the head. And, she thought killed her baby also, but, baby's alive. And that, I think that softened the blow. It was more about the baby than it was about anybody else.
Absolutely. I
And,
always I don't know, I think it was me who thought this, but like is the movie actually, are they actually just pretending like the war when she turns up at the villa? Are they just, is this all like mommy and daddy playing pretend with BB?
Like the whole movie.
Yeah.
That would be kind of neat.
Yeah. Honestly, the first time I saw it was I thought that's what was happening.
Yeah.
Because Bill is good at telling stories. Their kid is obviously obsessed with fucking, samurai swords. She watches Shogun Assassin every night,
That's a cool idea. I like that. I on this recent watch, I caught that Bill's drunk at the end of this movie. Like that's why he failed. That's why she defeats him. She gets him
Drunk.
drinking and reminiscing about their relationship, and he's slurring his words a bit towards the end. Like he's plastered.
I didn't catch that. No.
I don't think she could defeat a sober Bill.
I
Oh,
think he, because Bud even says she deserves to get her revenge and we all deserve to die. I think Bill knew that.
think Bill let her kill him?
Absolutely. Even if he wasn't drunk, because there's no hate. He's lit. You know what it reminds me of? He's kind of defending himself. He knows that she's there to kill him. She attacked. He shoots at her. He doesn't shoot her. But yeah, I think he knows that he's gonna die, and he kind of lets it happen.
Yeah, I guess, if anybody, he would want her to do it.
Yeah.
Damn.
Oh, shit, what is he, like 86 years old? He's almost there.
He's supposed to be like early 60s, but yeah, he's not a. He hated that he did that to her, but he also knew that he could not do that to her.
Yeah.
It was less, I think it was less about hurting her and more about saving his reputation in the assassin's.
Absolutely. Yeah.
He had to, there had to be a response. Damn. That flute that Carradine uses in the movie, Bill's flute, was an actual prop from the series Kung Fu, which was David Carradine's, action series in the 70s. It's why Tarantino cast him as Bill. He was bringing it to set and just playing it, and Tarantino was like, "Can you please put that in the movie? That's so cool."
That's cool. I didn't know that he can actually play that. That's a big ass flute.
Oh yeah.
It would have been cool. It's impossible, but it would have been cool if the flute was actually his like samurai sword sheath.
Yeah, that would have been
Cool.
sweet. Kill Bill Volume 2 was a huge hit, grossed 152 million on a budget of 30 million. Not as big as the first movie. It grossed about 30 million less than Kill Bill Volume 1. Mean, still a good haul.
Yeah. Which one? I know. I mean, I already know the answer, but which one do you like more?
One, definitely one.
Every time I watch both of them, it always changes, but I keep going back to two only because Pai Mei's in it. And I love Pai Mei.
I love Pai Mei, but you know what I love more? The entire Yakuza sequence of Kill Bill Part 1.
Yeah.
Holy shit. That's one of the coolest fight sequences I've ever seen. Just, limbs and eyes and heads getting chopped to shit. So, yeah. It's more of an action movie. Kill Bill 2 is more of a subtle, almost a drama, really.
Yeah, it is. It's a Western.
Yeah. It's a Western. Kill Bill Volume 2 has an IMDb score of 8.0. That's fantastic.
That's really good.
Rotten Tomatoes score of 84%, audience score of 89%. Critics' consensus reads, Kill Bill Volume 2 adds extra plot and dialogue to the action-heavy exploits of its predecessor, while still managing to deliver a suitably hard-hitting sequel, which is what we just said. So I think we agree. With that, let's talk about the film itself. We got best scene, best performance, best music moment, and best line. Where do you want to start?
Let's just do best performance and get this out of the way. So this one was really hard. because every single time she encountered someone new, I was like, oh, that's it. I was like, bud, oh, that 100%. And then Dylan, whatever her name is. Fuck, man.
Daryl Hannah.
Dylan. Daryl Hannah, I'm always like, oh, nope, that's it. Bill's it. But I gotta give it to Bill.
Man.
100%. Because he is so good. Oh, okay, he does exactly what the cult in Midsommar is doing to people that side with Danny at the end of the movie. I like Bill, so like I don't root for him, but I'm like, oh, he's a nice guy, you know, he's doing this for a reason, which means that he is so good at playing a toxic manipulator. He makes me fall for it every time I watch this movie.
Yeah, he's evil, but he's evil with a smile. He's this, you know, his code name's Snake Charmer. Like
I know, and
apt
he is a
description.
charmer. Yeah, absolutely. If you don't understand what I'm saying, people, in my opinion, Midsommar, people who think Danny won at the end of the movie and the boyfriend got what she deserves are fucking wrong. That's the whole point of the movie. Anyway, moving on.
Everyone in Midsommar is an idiot and an asshole, and they all deserve to
Yes.
die. Also, just watch The Wicker Man. It's a better movie.
Bees in my eyes.
No, the good Wicker Man, 1973. It, Nick. Why'd you have to do that one? Carradine's amazing in this. You know, the bar was like expectations were high for Bill. You know, we only see him in shadow in the first one. We never see his face. He's just this kind of presence. He's not really a character in the first movie. He's just, you know, the shadow. He's the reason Hattori Hanzo breaks his oath. Like, he's a big deal. Now we meet the man. The guy
He's the
who
man.
he is. He's the man. I love that shit. We find out this was all over a broken heart. That,
Yeah.
you know, when you she basically broke the devil's heart and reaped the consequences.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And that's such a great concept. And we don't really see Bill do anything other than just
Charm.
live and charm. He's got people to do his, you know, dirty work for him. That's what this whole thing is about. But he still got this, you know, this vibe. Like, you know, he could convince you to do anything.
Absolutely.
He's the man. I'm so glad David Carradine took the part because, you know, it was almost Kevin Costner and that wouldn't have worked.
Yeah, Kevin Costner is not a good one.
Yeah.
Keep him in Waterworld, please.
I gotta give it to Uma Thurman. I think of the two movies, she's better in this one. There's more
Yeah,
for her
she
to
is.
work with in this one as a character. And I just love seeing her go toe to toe with Bill and, you know, dealing with very complex, you know, feelings at war in her own soul.
Yeah.
And I buy it. You know, the look of her performance when she sees her daughter. I mean, you know, the panic, the joy, the rage, the fear, all of it at once. And you see it all happen at once in her face. And that's fucking magic.
Yeah. When she's getting buried alive and it's complete darkness, and you just hear her like panicking, that's fantastic acting. That's insane.
Yeah, I always love when Paime has her arm trapped and she's just screaming in absolute agony in Cantonese. Yeah, Uma, well done. So obviously it was going to be one of those two. This is Uma Thurman and David Carradine's ballet here. I would love to shout out some people. Michael Parks, Esteban Viejo.
Esteban.
Now, I should hate this because this is a white man pretending to be a Hispanic man, and I wrote a whole thesis about this shit in grad school. But there is something so fucking magnetic about Michael Parks that it works. I can't explain it. He's in brown face. He's doing the, you know, you are my number one
Oh,
lady kind of just
man.
goofy accent, but I fucking buy it, man.
Yeah. So he is Bill's father.
No, he's like Bill's like foster father. Like he raised Bill as like a crime boss who saw a kid with potential.
Why do you think she didn't go after B?
What do you mean?
Like, why didn't she? Why didn't he attack her?
No need. There was
So you
no.
think, but he knew that she was gonna kill him.
Yeah, but like he said, he says he gives her the location, and he says to her, "Do you know why I'm helping you? Because he would want me to. How else is he ever going to see you again?"
Yeah, that's
Right
fair.
there, he knew Bill better than anyone, I think, and he
Yeah.
knew this is what he wants.
Yeah, okay. So that being said, that just for like that strengthens my point that I think Bill knew he was gonna die.
I think you're right on that. I think, yeah. I mean, the second, Bill shows them, "Hey, I've been hiding your daughter from you," like right there, he had to know, like, he's not walking out of this alive.
No.
But also, I don't, like, he didn't want to. What's he got left? All he cared about was her.
Yep.
Damn. Yeah, Michael Parks, and that only worked out because Ricardo Montalban had a scheduling conflict and he couldn't make it. And Michael Parks did the table read in like this accent, and Tarantino was like, "That's pretty good. You want to play him?"
Oh my God, dude, come on.
Yeah, I love that. And also Gordon Liu, let's shout him out. Pai Mei. I mean, he's playing like basically a god in this movie.
Yeah, he is. Holy shit.
Like the god of Kung Fu taught the bride how to fight. Yeah,
He's also the god of air.
yeah. What, those are some eyebrows, man. And the fucking beard, the swish noise every time he'd move his beard out of the way. I love that.
Yeah.
The power in his fist, like you just believe this guy was invincible, which is why when you found out L killed him, it was such a huge shock.
Yeah, that's sad, actually.
Yeah, that such a titan of power would go down like that. Ah, well, hey, that he had the last laugh, didn't he?
He really did. He ripped out her thing.
Damn right.
Her eye, not her thing. Jesus.
That would be impressive. Yeah. The whole cast is great. I think Michael Madsen is doing some great work in here as a very
Yeah.
sympathetic, surprisingly, character, an
I think he's just
assassin.
fed up.
Yeah, fed up with the world. Like, he's one of the deadliest men in the world, trained by, I'm assuming, Bill. Pai Mei taught Bill. Bill taught the rest of those guys. But now he's a bouncer in a titty bar and is being yelled at by some dickhead who, and he's just got to take it. But
Yeah.
I love that the guy who no longer fights, who's not in this world anymore, he comes the closest to killing her.
Yeah. If he had actually shot her with a normal gun, she would be dead.
Yeah, 100%. Which makes you wonder, why didn't he? Well, he never mind. He wanted her to suffer. That was, yeah. Answer my
Yeah.
own question. But I love, yeah, Michael Madsen is just this kind of, broken, almost, regretful. Like you get the vibe that he wished he hadn't done that.
I think so.
Right. Yeah, performance. Yeah, great. Tarantino has never miscast anybody. He has such a great eye for the people he needs to. I think he's gotten to the point where he's writing characters for specific actors and no one's turning him down.
Yeah. Every performance in this movie is fantastic. There isn't a single bad one.
Nope. All right, let's do music. As per usual, this is an amazing soundtrack.
Yes.
I'll shout out my first one, About Her by Malcolm McLaren. It's a remix of She's Not There by the Animals and another song that escapes me. It's playing on the Blu-ray menu, and then also when after BB has gone to bed and Beatrix wakes up to go confront Bill.
That's a good one. Yep.
Yeah, love that song. So dark, so melancholy, so prophetic. Just works.
I don't remember. Well, I do remember. It's in both movies. It's Ironsides.
Oh yeah.
It's like that siren that plays anytime she sees someone she's gonna kill. But the fact that it plays, like when she's standing on the top of the hill after crawling out of the out of the hole in the ground. She sees Bill. That part's not Bill. Bud.
It's kind of, I love Bud's death scene with the Black Mamba, but I do wish that she'd gotten to have that kill. I mean, God, what she would have done to him.
Well, wasn't her nickname Black Mamba?
Yeah, but Elle killed her. Or killed Bud. Remember, she put the snake in the. So technically, Black Mamba killed him, but it wasn't.
Technically, Black Mamba killed.
Technicality.
Technicalities.
The Sundown by Ennio Morricone. It's a bit from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly that plays paired with Bill's flute at the beginning of the movie when she hears him outside the wedding. Just. It's like right there, it's like Bill. It's the only thing in your head. It's like, oh, here he is.
There's Bill.
Yeah. And his introduction, how'd you find me? I'm the man. It's all
I'm
you
the
need to
man.
know. It's like, yeah, okay. Continue.
Yep. Yes, sir. No further questions, Your Honor. Your Honor, my client's the man.
Enough. Free to go. Case dismissed. But I love the look in her eyes of like, oh my God, he found me.
I know.
But also
Fear.
like, I really hope like we're cool. Like, I'm happy to see him again, but also please don't destroy everything.
I like what is it called? It's the music that starts playing when B and Pai Mei start fighting for the first time. Shit.
Yeah, I don't know what it's called, but I know the scene you're talking about. And yeah, that's it's a great kung fu
It
scene.
starts with like a cymbal, and then it's like jazzy.
Yeah.
It's really a good fight scene, and we'll get into quotes and scenes and shit in a second, but
The Return of Joe by Ennio Morricone. This is a bit from the film Navajo Joe, and it's when Bill stands up after the 5-point palm. It's like
oh,
Bill's
such a good.
last walk, Jesus.
Tarantino is so good at like you know what I bet he does? I bet he listens to music and then he as he's listening to music, he comes up with the story. I really do think that his stories come from him listening to music.
Listening to music and watching old movies, because most of the stuff he pulls are from old spaghetti western, samurai movies. Cop shows. It's all shit he grew up watching.
Yeah.
And I read his book, Cinema Speculation, last year, and it basically spells that out. Like, it was all about the formative movie theater experiences from when he was a kid that shaped who he became as a film fan and as a filmmaker. And a lot of that stuff is, there's hints of that, of those movies all throughout his career. It's really impressive stuff. And neat. I wish I could recall, the movies I saw when I was five.
Yeah.
Shit.
I wish the only movie I can recall when I was five was Dougal, and God,
Dougal.
I hate that movie.
My last two are kind of simultaneous, like they're kind of, paired together. There's a Malagueña Salerosa by Chingon, Robert Rodriguez's band. That's the end credit song where we get to see, the cast of both movies get representation. Such a great movie. I love that Rodriguez did a song for this movie.
I wrote that down too, but also because in the credits it says to my brother Robert Rodriguez at the end.
Yeah, they became real close. They did a deal here. Rodriguez would score Kill Bill 2 for $1, and in return, Quentin Tarantino would direct the scene in Sin City for $1.
That's cool.
Pretty cool, especially if you know the scene in Sin City. It's when I think Del Toro's head is like talking to Clive Owen or something. It's a weird moment.
Is there a foot in
I don't think so. Two guys, so probably not.
Ah, damn.
And then the other one is Good Night Moon by Chivalry, the second end credits.
Yeah, this movie has two end credit scenes, which is kind of weird. Is that an outtake at the end when she's driving?
I don't know. I think so.
It's kind of uncomfortably long.
Yeah, I don't really get why there's two end credits here, but it's awesome. And that's such a great song and just very hypnotic.
Yeah.
And also we get a nice question mark on L, like, is she dead? We don't know.
We get a question mark on L, and Bill's name is not crossed off.
I would love if, like, in the Kill Bill Volume 3 graphic novel that I'm trying to will into existence, Bill is like in a wheelchair because, like, he's got one step left. But if he doesn't take that step, his heart's still there, still pumping.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I don't know. Could work. All right, let's any more music you want to shout out?
It was hard to write stuff down for music for this movie because it's all good. It's not my favorite Quentin Tarantino soundtrack. That goes to Pulp Fiction, but
Oh, favorite Tarantino soundtrack. Now you're talking.
Pulp Fiction or Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
I gotta give it to Django Unchained.
That one is pretty good.
Well, that Django is made almost entirely out of like spaghetti Western cowboy movie themes, which I
Yeah.
fucking love. So that and some original songs and some Morricone tracks. So that's just like tailor-made for someone like me. Love that
Yeah.
shit.
That's fair.
But yeah, Pulp's up there. I like the Reservoir Dogs soundtrack. You know, K. Billy's Super Sounds of the 70s wig.
Yep.
I love
Yeah.
that. Yeah, he's got an ear for music, man. Like, just goddamn.
He does. I just watched Reservoir Dogs for the first time, and when Mr. Orange was like, "I'm a cop," I was like, "I actually didn't see that coming."
Yeah, the cop shot in the gut, dying for this. Yeah, that was crazy.
I thought it was Mr. White the whole time.
He's got one of my favorite lines ever. It's like at the beginning at the diner where he's Mr. White says, like, "You shoot me in a dream, you better wake up and apologize."
Yep.
That's some cold shit. Ah, yeah, that movie rocks. Hell of a, that was his first movie, man. That was like how he
Insane.
started in Hollywood. Whew.
What was the second?
Pulp Fiction.
Jesus Christ, dude.
Yeah. He came out of nowhere and became like one of the most respected and beloved filmmakers in Hollywood, like overnight. Wins an Oscar for Pulp Fiction and then just rolls, keeps it rolling. Jackie Brown, Kill Bill, Death Proof, Inglourious Basterds, Django Unchained, The Hateful Eight, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
The critic.
Hopefully. That title might change. It's not a good title.
It's not.
All right, let's do dialogue. His other amazing God-given talent.
It's, yeah. You know, Quentin Tarantino is good at picking music and writing dialogue.
He's one of those Renaissance man filmmakers who just knows exactly, like, he can picture the entire movie in his mind's eye and just makes that.
Yep.
I like that's a hell of a talent.
And he writes a script in pen. Handwritten, which is insane.
And he's also a terrible like speller, which makes me laugh.
Yeah, that's great. One of the you said quotes is what we're doing? Dude. Fucking when she first meets Pai Mei, the first thing he says to her is like, "Oh, your Chinese is awful. You sound like a donkey." He's
You
fucking,
bray like an ass.
yeah, you bray like an ass. Yeah.
Well, hello to you too.
Yeah.
I love all the random fucking insults he just hurls towards her, trying to get her to piss him off so he can say,
Yeah.
get out of here, but she won't do it.
No, she's committed.
Yeah. I've always loved this line. It's so stupid. It's so nonsensical. It has no bearing on the movie at all. But I love it, and I will randomly just say it to people to like get a rise out of them. It's from Larry, the strip club owner, when Bud walks in, kind of late because there's no one there to bounce, and Larry just says, "I don't know what car wash you worked here before you worked before you came here that let you stroll in 20 minutes late, but it wasn't owned by me, and I own a fucking car wash." Such an asshole. Oh, I love that. Apparently, that came from a real interaction Tarantino had with an ex-boss.
Oh my God.
The whole like you're as useless as an asshole right here thing. Like this guy just went off on him for being kind of late.
I another quote from that part is when he's like, "Do you work tomorrow?" "Yep." "No, you don't. You don't even know what fucking days you work. You work Wednesday." "You did work Wednesday."
There's your name. There used to be your name.
Yeah. But the actual quote I wanted to say was when he says, "The hat, that fucking hat. How many times did I tell you not to wear that fucking hat?" And Bud says, "Customers wear hats." And Larry says, "I'm not the boss of customers, but I'm the boss of you. And I'm telling you to keep that shit kicker hat home."
I love the way he says like shit kicker. Like he put some stank on it. Such an asshole. That whole scene, just watching this like this nobody, this cokehead strip club boss nobody dress down a man who could kill him with his bare hands.
I got one more quote for that
Yes.
scene. I love when he says, "Take a hit, baby. Be somebody."
Oh yeah, that guy is that perfectly cast super prick.
Yes.
I've got at the end when Bill gets the 5-point palm exploding heart technique, he's stunned. You know, he's like, "Pai Mei taught you the 5-point palm exploding heart technique?" She says, "Of course he did." He says, "Why didn't you tell me?" She says, "I don't know, because I'm a bad person." He says, "No, you're not a bad person. You're a terrific person. You're my favorite person. But every once in a while, you can be a real cunt." Perfect. That exchange, just like he's so proud of her and kind of hurt that she didn't say anything. And also just like, you know,
He is not
reassuring her, like,
upset.
"I don't hate you. Don't hate yourself."
Yeah, he doesn't hate her for killing him.
No, he gets it. You know,
Yeah, absolutely.
he would respect her less if she didn't kill him.
Absolutely. Speaking of respect for killing someone, I didn't fucking write it down. Let me see if I can find an my IMDb. Fuck. Okay, I'm not gonna scroll. Jesus, there's fucking 200 lines of dialogue on IMDb. It's when California Mountain Snake, because again, I don't know her character's real name. After she kills Bill, she kills Bud, and she says, "Let me answer that question more thoroughly. What I am full of right now is regret, because probably the greatest warrior I've ever met her end by you, a scrub. She deserved more." She says something along those
I
lines,
got
and it's
you. I got you. Met her end at the hands of a bushwhacking, scrub, alky piece of shit like you. That woman deserved better.
Yeah, she says that, and then she gets kicked in the face by that same woman.
One of my favorite tropes in movies is like respectful hatred, like mortal enemies who despise each other, but goddamn, do they respect one another.
Batman and Joker.
Yeah. I love.
Batman can say all he wants, he respects Joker. I don't care what anybody says.
Like Ron Burgundy and Wes Mantooth. I hate you, Ron Burgundy, but damn it, do I respect you? Back them up. Yeah, I love that shit. Just, you know, there's power in that. And yeah, you know, it's right. You know, she. And I love that how far she's come, because she was going to kill Beatrix in her sleep not too long ago.
Yeah.
And Bill told her, you know, she deserves better. So she's had some time to think about that. And it's like, yeah, you know what? Should be, you know, she should have a glorious death in battle, not by you piece of shit. Also,
Just me or just
the scenes of him getting bit by that snake also are like fucking terrifying. The way that's
they
shot.
really are, yeah.
Good
Am I
God.
the only one that thinks his margarita looks really fucking good?
I mean, it's ice and margarita mix. You
I
can't get
know.
much more basic than that.
I know, but it just looks good. Why is it that food looks so fucking good in movies?
I don't
It's
like how
such a weird
creepily
thing.
he says, wrap your lips around that.
Yeah, ew. Oh God.
Ugh. Yeah. I love when Bill drops Pai Mei off, or Pai Mei drops that. Yeah, Bill drops the bride off at Pai Mei's. Long day. And he comes down like all beaten up, and she's like, "What happened?" He's like, "Ah, friendly contest." And he looks up at the stairs, and he's like, "Oh, you're gonna have so much fun carrying buckets of water up and down that fucker." And she says, "When will I see you again?" And he says, "That's the title of my favorite soul song of the 70s." She's like, "What?" He's like, "Nothing." When he tells me you're done, when do you think that might be? That, my dearest, depends entirely on you. Now remember, no back talk, at least not for the first year. You got to let him warm up to you. He hates Caucasians, despises Americans, and has nothing but contempt for women. So in your case, it might take a little while.
God.
Like, oh, yeah, I love that he's like, he's only accepting you because, you know, he's old and he's lonely.
Yeah, which I don't believe at all.
Wonder, like, see, the fact that like that whole thing makes you wonder even more about Bill. I mean, he has a friendly fight contest with Pai Mei, who clearly respects him as an equal.
Yeah.
Like, shit. Who is this guy? Yeah. I'd like a, you know, I'd like to read like a prequel novel just called Bill.
Absolutely.
You know, being taught by Pai Mei and Hattori Hanzo.
Oh, man.
This guy is a legend.
I wonder what he was like in his prime then, you know?
Right? Yeah, this guy must have been like fucking Darth Vader to the assassin underworld, like just a force to be reckoned with that everyone fears for a long time. You don't build a rep like that overnight. That's a 30, 40 year endeavor.
No, I mean, how did he get like the most powerful woman in Japan to join him, you know?
Well, no, she left him to become the most powerful crime boss, and he backed her play.
Oh, okay.
She wouldn't just give up being Yakuza boss to go work as an assassin for some guy.
That's fair, yeah.
I like the line when Bud calls Elle to tell her that he beat Beatrix, and she answers Bill when he goes, "Wrong brother, you hateful bitch." She's just like, "Oh, hey Bud, what do you want?"
What's another quote? There's a lot.
A Tarantino movie. You're never gonna, there's never gonna be a shortage of great lines in a Tarantino movie. With that, let's move to scene.
Yeah.
What are some amazing scenes in this movie you want to spotlight?
Fucking her breaking out of the coffin is one of my favorite. It's like one of my most favorite films in film history. She's like, okay, Pai Mei, let's do this. No, okay, Mei, I'm coming. And she fucking climbs out of there.
Yeah, that's some awesome shit. I mean, that's a legitimate real phobia of mine that I'm
Yeah.
gonna wake up somehow buried alive.
Have you seen Buried?
Have you seen The Vanishing?
No.
It's the original Buried.
Oh shit,
Not
okay.
really, like it's not a remake, but like it's probably like the first movie to really deal with that kind of thing. And I haven't seen Buried yet, but The Vanishing fucked me up. That movie scared the shit out of me.
Oh shit.
And now, actually, you know what? Now we can finally. I got more shit to put on the calendar. I'm so excited. But yeah, I love that scene. Just the triumphant music, the her getting the razor, which also is the same exact razor prop from Reservoir Dogs, where Mr. Blonde cut off the cop's ear.
Are you serious?
Same prop.
That's awesome. I love that so much.
Yeah. And yeah, just her, you know, ignoring the blood and the pain and just punching her way out of a fucking coffin. That's one of the most badass just things anybody can do is punch their way out of a coffin.
Yeah. Fucking badass.
And then to follow it with like, you know, the hand coming out of the grave and then her walking into the diner and asking for water.
Yeah. Can I have a glass of water?
Oh, fantastic. I just love Elle getting her eye ripped out. That's such a perfect moment.
It is so fucking gross.
It's so brutal, but it is so deserved. And the fucking squish when she steps
Oh! Oh man.
it.
You know, Tarantino was like, okay, now fucking step on it.
Oh, God. They had to do that for like 40 takes. There was nothing wrong with any of those takes. He just couldn't stop filming it.
My God.
I made
Yeah.
that part up, but you'd believed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's that. Yeah, the build up to that, her revealing she killed Pai Mei, the whole bitch, you don't have a future line, just Bud's Hanzo sword that he still has because he just wanted to
What?
hurt Bill.
Okay. Yeah, I was gonna ask, why do you think he said he
Just to stick the knife in a little, which makes you wonder, like, what? Why did they? No, that wouldn't make sense. But I was thinking, like, was L dating Bud first?
I don't think she would get with that.
Well, that now, but in the time, in the days, back in the day, think Mr. Blonde with a samurai sword.
Oh, yeah, that's fair.
So maybe. Maybe that's where the beef comes from.
Maybe.
But I also thought, there's a theory going, like, there was a theory going around, which is stupid because the sword's in the movie. But he said he pawned it. So people were like, oh, well, that's the sword Butch finds in the pawn shop in Pulp Fiction. But he kept it. So it's not the same. No. But that'd be cool.
Maybe he did sell a samurai sword, though.
Yeah, maybe. I love that Hanzo like engraved the fucking sword, like, to my brother. Like, he was cool with that.
I like, it's not really a, oh, yeah, it's a scene. When it's at the very end of the movie, when, she's it's I think it's actually after the first credits. It's B and BB, and they're driving in a car, and it says the lioness has reunited with her cub. All is quiet in the jungle.
Yeah, that was. I love the end credits where it says they're AKA Sidewinder, Black Mamba, but then like under her it says AKA Mommy.
Yep.
It's a nice touch.
It is. It's cute. I like that.
Yeah. Of course, one day BB's gonna be asking about her dad, and she's gonna have to be like, "Let me sit down and tell you a story in two parts."
No, she knows all about life and death because she killed her fucking goldfish.
Yeah.
Great parenting, Bill.
Well, he's a sociopath. What were you expecting?
That's fair.
The whole fucking Pai Mei sequence is gold.
Absolutely. I like when she is like too weak to eat with her chopsticks.
I love that he has three bowls because he knew that was going to happen.
Yep.
He knew that was going to be a teaching moment.
Also, I used to like when he smells the rice. I was like, it's just fucking rice. It like, come on, man. But have you ever just like eaten plain white rice?
Yeah, all the time. I fucking love plain white
It's
rice.
so good. My God. So simple. So fluffy.
Simplest foods are the best.
You know it's really good if you're brave enough because it is safe. You get freshly cooked white rice, put it in a bowl, and crack a raw egg on it, and then mix the raw egg in with the rice in your bowl. Oh my fucking God.
Well, then isn't it just doesn't that Isn't it fried rice now?
No, because the egg stays raw
Oh.
but warm. So
No.
it's like wet. It sounds
I'm
disgusting.
not gonna I'm not Rocky. I'm not gonna eat a raw egg. I don't care what you mix into it.
It's so good. It's a Japanese breakfast. But, you know, I hate, what did you say? I hate the Japanese.
He says it worse than that, but yes, he throws out some slur. I love like in the rice bit when she finally picks it up with the chopsticks. I love the smile on his face of like, I fucking knew you could do it. Like he believes in her, but it's tough love.
Absolutely. He was, do you think, I know it's the trope of like the old, wise Kung Fu master, but Master Shifu had to be based on Pai Mei, right?
Oh, yeah, of course. The beard
Okay.
alone, yeah, 100%.
Okay. Yeah.
That Pai Mei is fantastic. I love the power that he punches through. Put your fist through him. It's awesome.
I like the scene with Bill telling the story of Pai Mei at the campfire.
Yeah, it really sets him up to be this titan of, power and fear.
Yeah.
He gave the monk the slightest of nods.
So does that mean he didn't nod? He just maybe looked down a little bit?
No, he definitely nodded because the fact that the nod is not returned is what gets all these people killed. So he was like, "How you doing?" And the guy was like, "And he was like, oh, no." And then went back and killed everybody that guy knew.
Man.
Which is some psychotic shit. Pai Mei is not the good guy in that story.
No, absolutely not. I like how he says, your sword play is amateur at best, and yet she killed, not really, 88 Yakuza members.
Well, later, after Pai Mei taught her how to fight properly,
Yeah.
I love when she kicks him in the balls and he like catches her foot with his balls and like flings it off. Like this guy, a complete mastery over every bit of his body. I love, Bill's last stand when he, I have it in my notes as Bill is killed. And he just, he accepts it, he walks off, and he just falls over. And Beatrix just kind of sits there, letting it linger that it's over. It's
She's
done.
free.
Yeah. Pretty crazy.
I like the truth serum bit.
Oh yeah, the undisputed truth. I keep wondering, is truth serum real? Like,
So,
it seems like some sci-fi nonsense, but I don't know.
what I think it is I think it's just drugs. I think it just gets you high, so it just loosens you up.
Okay, so it makes you like susceptible to telling the truth. It can't force
Yeah.
you to actually tell the truth because that's fucking
No.
crazy.
Yeah. No. It just gets you really fucked up.
Yeah, that whole sequence, just Bill and Beatrix kind of shooting the shit and figuring out what led to this and why it happened is a great dialogue piece. I love it.
I like how, oh no, go ahead.
No, go ahead. All yours, man.
I was gonna say I kind of like the symmetry. How volume two ends with Bill parading her daughter around to maybe try to garner some sympathy, and Kill Bill volume one starts with Copperhead parading her daughter around to maybe garner some sympathy.
Yeah, they don't know who they're fucking with here. You can't,
Nope.
hell hath no fury like a woman scorned is a saying for a reason. I love the comparison with the superheroes, the idea that like, Peter Parker and Bruce Wayne have to put on costumes to be superheroes, but Superman was born Superman and Clark Kent is the costume. I like that.
I would argue Batman is also the same way. Bruce Wayne is never, Bruce Wayne died with his parents.
Yeah.
He is Batman all the time, and he pretends to be Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, I 100%. There was a comic panel I saw where Batman, Bruce Wayne, Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman are holding Wonder Woman's lasso of truth, and they're all saying like, the question is, who are you? And she goes, Diana of Themyscira. He goes, Kal-El, and Batman says, Batman. That was cool. Like, yep, right there. There is no
That's why
Bruce
I
Wayne.
like the 2020. Is that when it came out? The 2020 Batman?
21.
21? That's why I like him so much. People are like, oh, he's too emo as
No,
Bruce
22.
Wayne.
22, my dude.
22, yeah. People say, oh, he's too emo to be Bruce Wayne, but like that's the point. He has to learn to be Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, he's already Batman. He's got that figured out. He's got to now he's got to figure out the mask. I caught on to that immediately. I don't know why that wasn't clear with people.
I know. People are like, oh, he's fucking edgelord now. It's fucking, why is he wearing mascara? First of all, he wears eye makeup in every movie.
Yeah. We just don't see it because we don't ever see the we see the putting on the suit, we never see the taking off the suit.
Exactly. Yeah.
But it does make me laugh that like during, you know, Mr. Freeze is robbing a bank downtown. He's like, I'll be there and when I, you know, can, Commissioner, and he's over
What?
the mirror, like putting on the eyeliner. I'm like, Alfred's like, could we maybe move this along, sir? You know that happens. Like he's, you know, maybe he had too many pancakes that morning and he's like struggling to get the fucking rubber on that day.
Or he loses the paint. He's like, where the fuck is my grease paint, Alfred?
That, yeah.
Sorry, just go without it. You don't understand. I fucking can't. I'll look stupid without
True. That
it.
one, that brief moment in Batman Returns when he like takes his mask off and he doesn't have the eyeliner on, he looks so stupid.
Yep.
But yeah, great scene in Kill Bill where he's like, you know, pointing out a real, you know, Beatrix will always be Black Mamba. There's nothing that can change that, including having a baby or getting married in Texas. It's like she'll always be a killer. But also, you know, that doesn't justify anything.
No. She probably killed more people in the hunt for Bill than the entire team did in their existence.
Probably, yeah. I mean, I don't let's check that. What's the Kill Bill body count? Kill Bill body count, the bride. Okay, so she kills 40 people in the first movie. And nope, my mistake. 62 in the first movie. And in the second movie, she only kills Bill.
Oh. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
She does only kill Bill. Holy shit.
Yeah. Elle survives. She kills Bud. That's it. They're the only three ki or well, no, and then Pai Mei. So like the Pai Mei, Bud, and Bill are the only three deaths in this movie. Not
Holy
counting
shit.
flashback.
That's weird.
Any other scenes you want to shout
Now, yeah, the whole fucking movie.
out? It is one of those movies. Yeah, it's fantastic.
I like when we meet his foster dad,
Esteban.
Esteban, because you can see where he gets the charm from.
Must warn you, I am susceptible to flattery.
And she's like, okay, buddy, where's Bill?
She is so done with this shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's imagine if you're like right at the finish line of a race, and then some yahoo shows up, and you can't finish the race till you gotta t till you talk to this guy.
Yeah.
And he knows that, so he's gonna drag this shit out.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm happy that scene didn't become a caricature. Like it feels genuine. It really could be the goofiest moment of the movie, but because it somehow worked, you know, it doesn't
Yeah.
tarnish the movie.
Just like Robert Downey Jr. in
Yeah,
Tropic.
exactly. There's I can't explain it, but we all get it.
Oh,
All right. Well, with that, let's take a look at what Letterboxd has to say on our final segment, What's in the Box?
What's in the fucking box? Give me the gun.
Kill Bill Volume 2 has a 4.0 out of 5.
Wow.
Fantastic. Yeah, oh, yeah. Tarantino has a lot of love here. And I have four horrific reviews. And one very positive that had me rolling because of you'll see. So we're going to start with that one. This is from Lucy. This is a 5-star review. Listen, the entire chapter L and I is absolutely one of the best sequences that Quantum Toronto has ever made.
Okay.
Quantum Toronto. I've never heard that before, and I thought that was funny as well. All right. Now here's four people who hated this. This is from Caden Tay. These are all half a star, by the way. Oh no, two of them are half stars, one of them are one star. This
oh
is
my
Apple.
God.
Entire film felt like a work meeting that could have been an email.
What the fuck, dude?
Yeah, a lot of the negative reviews are, you know, boring. This, you know, where's the action? Too much talking, shit like that. Come on. This next one's from 2 hours is too long. Definitely felt all 137 minutes of this one. Still a banger though, and I'm glad he toned down the foot thing. Does that sound like a half a star review to you?
No.
What the hell? You liked it, apparently. So where's this coming from? Because it's over 2 hours? That's not fair.
Okay.
This next one's from The Films of Cinema. I love that.
Okay.
Really fucking confused. Watched this without seeing Volume 1. Had no idea what the fuck was going on. Bad script. Started in the middle of the story. Didn't kill Bill till the end. Literally just one guy named Bill. Like,
started in the middle of the story because you fucking started with the second movie. It's called Volume 2. And of course it's going to end killing. What the fuck do you mean?
The part that confuses me is literally just one guy named Bill. Like, were they expecting multiple Bills?
88 of them, perhaps?
They're not all Bill. He is aware of that, right? Because that would be insane and ridiculous. It's not like the League of Bills. Like, Bill Cosby's not there. Bill Clinton isn't there. Like, what are you talking about? Fucking ridiculous.
My God.
And this last one, oh boy, we got an essay.
And it's a half a star?
It's one star.
Oh my God.
This is from Roberka.
Okay.
Hate watched volumes 1 and 2 because by the time I realized these were terrible movies, it was too late. Even though I liked Pulp Fiction, did you? I think Tarantino's movies are all style and lack any real substance. Fight me on it. I don't care. There are so many things wrong with this duology. I just do not understand why they are still considered iconic movies. First, what the fuck is Tarantino's weird obsession with stereotypical Asian culture? I find it cheap and phony. I also don't understand why this movie is considered feminist. Just because there is a strong female lead? It just seems like an excuse to humiliate, over-sexualize, and fetishize Thurman and the other female characters. That's bullshit. We're going to come back.
I don't think there is any moment where... Yeah.
Uma Thurman co-created The Bride with Tarantino. Like, so, no. The entire movie is viewed from the male gaze, from female rage to conflict to justice and resolution. Oh, and the god-awful ending with the annoying trope of a woman becomes a mother and suddenly all is well and blissful in the world. What? Overall, these are nothing but fetish films. The whole point of the movie was her...
Yeah, what?
She did this getting entirely because she thought she lost her daughter, and then when she doesn't, and when she finds out she still has her, yeah, all is right with her world.
Bro, what the fuck?
This is the... I would argue, you know, Tarantino consistently has very strong female characters in his movies.
Absolutely, yes. And Uma Thurman is never once sexualized in the entire movie. She's, you know, covered in blood, mud, sweat, tears.
I mean, Bud comments on her tits, but he's a shit-kicking piece of shit. He's supposed to be that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't...
And if you think she's sexualized because of the feet thing, sorry to tell you, you're into feet.
This seems like virtue signaling. Like, you know, I don't, you know, I don't hate, I support everything, but I'll show you who doesn't. Like, that's what this feels like. And stereotypical Asian culture, I mean,
he took it from martial arts movies.
Yeah, it's supposed to be over stylized. Like, that's the point. Some people just miss the fucking boat, you know? They lose the plot.
Yeah.
And you know what? More for us.
Yeah.
Ah. Well, that is our show. Thanks for listening, everybody. If you like what we do, feel free to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Filmgasm Productions. I still don't like saying that. If you want to suggest films for us to check out, you can email us at filmgasm@gmail.com or send us a message through Facebook, Instagram, or X. I'm going to throw the emphasis on until we finally change that shit back to Twitter. Check out our Letterboxd accounts for daily reviews. You can search for me at Connor95, and in my friends list, you can find the rest of the team. Check out our website, filmgasm.com, where I have a link to my Letterboxd if you want to read reviews. You can also find articles, trailers of upcoming films in every episode of every era of our show. If you'd like to become a monthly donor to Filmgasm Productions, feel free to click on the link in the episode description. From there, click on Support This Podcast. You can choose to donate $1 a month, $5 a month, or $10 a month, and all donations go right back into the podcast, and we greatly appreciate it. Thanks to the entire Filmgasm team for their contributions to the show. Thanks to Cooley Cal for our awesome theme music, and thanks to you for checking us out. Next week, we get freaky. I'm talking Lovecraft freaky. Enter Herbert West, a brilliant scientist who has found a way to reanimate the dead. When it falls into the wrong hands, all hell breaks loose, and it's up to West and his classmate to stop an army of the dead. Based on the novella by H.P. Lovecraft, it's Reanimator. So psyched to discuss this nightmarish body horror cult favorite next time. This was a specific request from Caleb. I've seen this movie once before. It's a trip. One of the most sexually violent scenes in movie history. I'm excited to talk about it. Only Stuart Gordon could come up with something that fucked up. But we'll get to that. Until then, don't blow up anybody's heart and always return a respectful nod. Take it easy. Keep watching movies. We'll see you next time. The book,